This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
Part of what I wanted to do is get back out as we started the legislative session, just to see, what you're finding. We've had a whole fall. What is going to be useful, and also to be able to give you some advice on how these programs are going to roll out. I think Randall did a great job of sort of highlighting the issues. There are a number that are going to go. I think about 70% of our lands that were affected were private lands. That changes the way the mechanisms for federal programs. It's a little bit unclear where President Trump is going to take those programs. When I was first put in as governor, we had baby governor school down in Colorado. That was the Trump administration. And they were saying that FEMA has the issues that it does, and we're going to have to look at it a little bit differently. Since that time, we've had North Carolina, we've had Los Angeles, and a lot of others. So I don't think the pressure for reforming FEMA programs is any less. And most importantly, I think one of the biggest issues here is how do we make sure as we get into spring, we don't end up with runoff problems that are going to be problematic for our water sources, making sure that the water that you do get is fine. And Peter and I were talking a little bit about the work that's there. You have watersheds here that were all affected. Private lands, private infrastructure, all big features. And the way Wyoming responds to that, I think, is going to be critical. Sheridan College, in particular, has been a leader on invasive grasses. Those of you who are probably familiar with things like cheatgrass understand that if it dries out and you are, let's say, grinding for a welding project and a little spark flies off, it'll turn into a fire almost instantaneously. And so our concern has been, as we recover these landscapes, how do we make sure that we don't create a new fire hazard where we could have done a better job recovering those. As we go through this, I think we'll have an opportunity to talk about where the legislature is taking some of these programs. Randall spoke that we were looking for $130 million in grants. Let me make it clear, this was not a giveaway from the state of Wyoming. This was if and only if federal programs couldn't meet the needs. And we're really looking at a wide scope, not only just private landowners, but also county infrastructure, city infrastructure, and other features of the landscape. So I think that's particularly clear. I think as we have an opportunity to talk about what these loan programs look like, we'll find out if they're going to be of any value. I have some grave doubts about the loan program being that useful, and I'll tell you why. Wyoming always has to be in first place. So that means you have to subordinate any other loans that you have so that Wyoming can occupy that first place. If you have an operational loan or a mortgage, they're going to have to figure out how to negotiate those to being in a second place behind that. So we can walk through some of those things. The last thing that I would say, you have a handout here, I believe, and on the bottom is a QR code that will take you to our grants management and other programs. We can talk about that as we get into this a little bit deeper. We stood up, Senator Barrasso, Senator Lummis, and I, a grants management office some time ago that has really been a great resource. We broadened it for individuals, not just communities, this last year. So if there's any help you need, please get there. And then lastly, we'll have an open dialogue about what to do next. So with that, Bob, let me turn it over to you.
Thank you all very much, and appreciate the chance to be here with you today. I'm Bob Budd. I'm the director of the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust. Many of you have worked with us in the past. Some of you may not have, but you've seen our work because you can't drive up and down the highways in Wyoming and not see projects we've done. I want to make a couple things clear. There was a concern early on that this money was somehow the same thing as the fire money, which has been asked for in forestry and Homeland Security and others. It is not. That is, we're full support of that. That is fire suppression. This is, we're talking about ecological recovery. And that's the role that my agency plays. We have to show a public benefit for that, which is relatively easy to do. Just as Governor Gordon said, if you're able to prevent drastic fires or an alteration of the ecosystem completely, there is a huge public benefit. There's a huge public benefit in restoring habitat for wildlife and in preventing water from clean water issues. The two areas that we focused on in our request were invasive species. We know that cheatgrass in particular, but Medusa head, ventonata, love fire. They'll occupy that. That's how they're built. Those are plants that are built to do that. And after a fire, depending on what you get for conditions, it can be drastic. It can be beneficial. I'm guessing a certain percentage of the lands that burn, probably half or more, are going to come back more resilient, better than ever. But that other portion that isn't coming back that way, whether it was fire to mineral soil or whether it was previous issues, that we need to be paying attention to. That's what we need to focus on. So the restoration piece is half of this, and the invasives is the other part. Sometimes they're going to overlap. We have a good idea where those areas are based on the fire mapping that was done, based on previous mapping that's been done. Dr. Mueller is here. I know they've done a lot of the mapping of the invasives in the region. We know where they are. We need to go back and get those treatments done. The reason this was done differently is because time is absolutely of the essence. You can't wait 3 or 4 years and say, oh, look, now we have cheatgrass everywhere. We need to get them on it now, as in 2025. And some of this will have to wait a year. We're going to need to look and see how things respond. But if we're not on the ground in 2025, take a look at Nevada, take a look at Southern Idaho, take a look at Southern Oregon, and see what happens, because it happens that fast. The other thing I'd mention is, how do the grants work through the Wildlife Trust? Carrie Robicheski's back here. They've done several with us. We've done them with the forest. We've done them with Clear Creek Conservation District, with all your weed and pest districts. They're really pretty simple and straightforward. The program was designed that way. We work with partners to deliver on the ground. You've all heard me say, and the governor say numerous times, the best government is the closest to the people. And that's what we believe on the trust board. Commissioner Haswell here is one of my board members. She can tell you that entire 9-member board is absolutely dedicated to that. So the way that we envision this is a pass-through to where Sheridan County Conservation District would come to us and say, look, these are the areas we need to get treatment right now. And then we'd work with them to get that out onto those properties. It's not welfare. It's taking care of our basic infrastructure of this state, which is our natural resources. So they're very simple. It's a contractual agreement that we write, and then it's administered locally. And if there's problems, we can adjust them and make adaptation to it. So I think that we had a pretty darn elegant design, and the idea that would convert to a loan program completely changed it. That, as the governor said, then now you require collateral. Now you require somebody to, what, collateralize their ranch so that they can go out and we can deal with the invasive species issue? That just doesn't seem right. So that's the direction we'd like to go. We think we have a solution that may appeal to those who wanted loans. The rationale there was that they didn't want to pay for infrastructure as a grant. Okay, I can accept that. Then carve that piece out, but let's not lose the part that is most important, which is the grants that we do with local government, with all of you folks in this area, to get things done and done, you know, time. With that, I'll pass it to Jennifer with OSLI, and she can talk to you a little bit about how their loan program works.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Doring. I'm the Assistant Director of Administrative Services for the Office of State Lands and Investments. And today I'm going to talk about a couple programs. The first I'm going to talk about is the Federal Mineral Royalty Grant Program, or MRG program. which many of the communities and entities in this room have taken advantage of that federal mineral royalty program. And those are a grant program funded out of the Office of State Lands and Investments with the approval of the State Loan and Investment Board. So those grant applications come in from entities that have a direct and immediate threat to safety, the threat to safety, welfare, and also essential public services. So a lot of those grants are to entities, municipalities, cities, towns, counties, special districts that provide essential public safety. So you can think we fund water projects, sewer projects, water and sewer combined projects. We fund police and police stations, fire, EMS, hospitals. All of those programs run through our mineral royalty grants. What is important about that is the need for those programs is substantially more than the funding we receive in a biennium to fund those programs. The revenue from those programs come from federal mineral royalties and severance tax. So we cannot fund more projects than we get funding out of those sources each biennium. With that, I know that there was a lot of ARPA projects or American Rescue Plan Act projects that didn't meet the thresholds of having those under contract by the end of October to be both engineered and under construction contracts. And so we do anticipate that a lot of those well-engineered projects that are important to our communities will come back to this mineral royalty grant program to finish those good projects on the ground. And so we did request additional funding in Office of State Land Supplemental Budget to help meet the needs of those communities and municipalities and those entities that need those essential public services and to meet the reoccurring demand for higher amounts of funding than we actually have available to grant to us. With that, I'll also talk about, as Bob Budd mentioned, the loan program. So OSLI and the SLIP board manages loans, whether that's the capital construction loans or farm loans and beginning ag loans. If this money was to be converted to a loan program run out of the Office of State Lands and Investments through the SLIP board, as mentioned, it would require collateral on those loans. We currently hold the first position on any of those loans, as Governor Gordon mentioned, which means that you would be collateralizing something, whether that's your farm, or is it fences, infrastructure, the ground, in order to get those loans. So we fully support that the grant program was the easiest to work through. If it is turned into a loan program, we will be working closely with WWNRT as we work with all of our partners in any of our funding now, either through the MRG program or a loan program. We work with the partners, our partners who are the experts, whether that's Department of Environmental Quality, Water Development, the State Fire Marshal, construction. We go to those and work hand in hand with our partners who are the experts. But if those loans were to be loans for the fires, we would require collateral when we fund those and evaluate them for loan risk. Thank you.
I'll step up here so I can see better if anybody has any questions. That's sort of the overview of what we've got here. Again, High Points, we know that there's been a tremendous amount of damage. About 800,000 acres burned this year. Of that, most of that was private or state facilities and lands. We know that with the funding that I asked to replace, we burned through, bad word, sorry, we used all of the funding that we had that was provided for fire suppression, used entirety of my contingency account, Homeland Security's contingency account, and then the legislature had provided the opportunity for me to be able to borrow from the legislative stabilization reserve account up to a certain amount. We used all that capacity. So first and foremost, we'll be replacing that. So the dollars we're talking about and the programs we're talking about here today are designed to try to offset what the future needs might be should we see lands starting to get invaded with cheatgrass and other species that you've heard. We also know that that's going to take a couple of years to express itself. We know that it's going to be important for us to understand exactly what this winter is going to bring in terms of runoff and what our requirements are going to be able to meet those as we went forward. My concern that I mentioned before is that we are not anybody, nobody is anxious to see the state waste money or to make it provide an opportunity for people to just take advantage of it. It's really about use where it's necessary and making sure that the federal programs are fully used beforehand. So with that, let me open it up to see if there are questions, because I think this is really more about your concerns than it is ours. Yeah.
I don't have a question, but these guys lost a lot of property. I didn't lose any, but these farmers and ranchers and landowners, I mean, it's devastating. They didn't start this fire. They shouldn't have to get a loan to help their property of something that they had no control over. I mean, we need to do grants. We need to help these people out.
Well, I thank you for that, and that's certainly the intent we had when we provided that opportunity. I understand why people think loans would be good, but I don't believe that people understand the practical issues related to loans. And the fact of the matter is, when we have irrigation infrastructure collapse, as we did in Goshen County, we didn't look at this the same way. So thank you for your comment. Yes, Ms. Guillen.
My question is, have you worked on any type of overall assessment of the color picture at the nine counties that were affected by these fires? And in that sense, have you considered how many of the farmers beyond the list? The whole picture is the entire impact, and it's on both the environment, most importantly, people first, the environment, and then third, looking at the impact of not grazing up on federal lands and not doing what we should protection by a buddy, that's your business. I think if you're doing it, looking at that, as well as, and I'm talking about coming through insurance, you know, the loss grass lands, and your homeowners, your farm owners, and your grandchildren, insurance policy, you know, coming out. And 70%, I think, is on private land.
Sorry.
Nancy, thank you. Maybe you've missed it a little bit, but we have all the declarations in place for people to take advantage of those federal programs, and the Grant Management Office will help you to be able to get those security on that. And moreover, your point about forest management, absolutely correct. We've been fighting for that since every year that I've been in, and you will hear me speak about that in many, many cases. In this particular case, you have the House Draw, the Constitution, the Remington. All of these fires actually started on private lands. So this year, your point about having a grand overview is really good, and I don't discount it. In fact, that is part and parcel of what we're doing. But we also know that it is absolutely essential that we start working right away. If you've been in ranching, you know that letting something go for a long period of time can be problematic over time. So I really appreciate your comments, and particularly about the insurance issue as well. It's something that Commissioner Rood and I have talked about quite substantially. The issues applying to Wyoming are coming from things that have happened in California, things that have happened in Florida, things that have happened in Idaho and Oregon and elsewhere. Yes, we are looking at all of those things, and I really appreciate you bringing those up. But I'm going to take a couple of other questions. I know you want to respond, but I'm going to take a couple of questions. Okay. We did declare the disasters that we could in working carefully with Homeland Security, with all of the various agencies. In fact, Peter, I think you'll remember that we did that almost immediately right here because it allowed, and Nancy, let's take this offline. Let's take this offline because you have to apply for a disaster and then it has to be accepted. And if you don't have the requirements, that doesn't happen. So for example, when we had the blizzard some time ago down there, 1 inch short of 1949, 1 inch short of it. Neither 1949's blizzard nor this one qualified for a federal disaster. So we did what we could to make sure that people could get those loans and move forward. And as I say, that's all available on the Grants Management Office. So let me take some other questions.
Governor,
yeah, and please go ahead.
I want to address part of the question relative to inventory. The inventory began the day the fire was out. So we have, Weed and Pest has done all of it, has worked on inventory there as the areas that have burned the hottest, the areas that will be most likely needed. We've worked collaboratively with the University of Wyoming. I mentioned Brian Mueller sitting back here, Dr. Mueller, identifying those areas. So as it relates to how fire impacted the landscape, Game and Fish has begun and is continuing inventory on areas where habitats, critical habitats, may need to be treated immediately, and we have conservation districts that are also doing that. So that, it comes up from the source. So if a landowner says, I've got this issue, this one is what I'm really concerned about, whether it's related to erosion, whether it's related to invasives, that's all being done now so that we can hit the ground this year. As the governor said, it won't all get done this year. Probably 25%, I'd feel really good if we got 25% of this addressed in the first year. But the inventory work is being done and will continue to be done as we move forward. And some of this grant money may be used for additional inventory work. So that's a part of it I want to make sure we understood.
And the application for a federal disaster was put in October 16th. Has not been received yet. I've been responded to. Any other questions? Yes, Nick.
Yeah, because I'm so soft-spoken, I really need a microphone. But at any rate, first of all, Mark, I'd like to thank you for, Mark and I were in telephone contact every day during the Oak Fire up here on the mountain and trying to talk about what we could do and what the state could do. And, you know, there were people bring in the National Guard. Well, we had the best firefighting crews in the nation here working on it. And the National Guard gave the assets that they could or that were prudent and reasonable to use. And at any rate, just I'd like to thank the governor for that. Second of all, I guess we enjoy, in Sheridan County, I believe we enjoy an outstanding working relationship with the National Forest and with our federal government and so on. But I guess my question would be if, especially some of these individual ranchers out there who might not have the pipeline, whatever, to know exactly what to do, if we could do something of some sort of a resource where, kind of like a flow chart, where did this happen to you, do this, did this happen, you know, a flow chart type thing, so that it makes it easier for the layman ranchers out there in the community to try and get the funds that they can get. And I, you know, I pledge that we will do as much as we can do in Sheridan County to work with our legislators to try and rectify the situation that Mr. Budd was talking about, because we also all know that as a rancher, on a shoestring budget and so on, right now, if you lost cows, you lost feed, you lost fences, you lost whatever, the last thing you want to do is sign up for a loan. So, you know, that's very important. But anyway, we'll pledge to try and do that. But if there can be something, just a simple flow chart type thing about, okay, if this happened, contact this organization. If this happened, fill out this paperwork, something like that. And maybe that exists, I don't know. Thank you.
And Nick, I think it does. I think this is your first entry to that. We also, off of our website, there's a flow chart. Right from the start, one of our first things was how do we get the resources available and how do we talk about it? And I talked to Steve Adamai and a couple of other people who remember the Cato Fire and said, okay, so you've been through the government gobbledygook before. How do we make it simpler? How do we make it better? So if there are questions or people say, this doesn't work for me, I want to hear about it so we can make it and reform it and get it better. This is going to be a multi-year project, so thanks, Nick, for that. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Governor Gordon. I was curious, I understand this is about, my name is Brett, I'm an ex-wildland firefighter, done so for 12 years. And I know this is about fire recovery. And maybe this is something you've already discussed at some other forum, but what about the mitigation as far as what we can do for the, she brought up some of the fuels. And I'm a runner also, and I go up in the woods and I see all the blowdown from the winter. I'm just wondering whether or not anybody's working on that as far as building slash piles and things of that nature. And I was also curious whether or not you have considered maybe contract engines. That's kind of what they do instead of outsourcing. I understand this is a large fire. It lasted for a long time. I remember the one in 2007, and it burned pretty hot. It took a long time to get this fire out. I don't understand why it did, but it did. So I guess those are the primary questions that I have, and I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, and thank you for that. I can assure you that we have been very much engaged on forest planning, on trying to figure out a way to get timber sales. Wyoming has good neighbor management, and we've been working on the Bighorn Forest, the Black Hills Forest, Region 2's forests have been pretty cooperative. Region 4, which is, you know, Ranger Teton and others, a little less so. I can tell you that I've been in regular contact with this incoming administration on ways that we can free that up. But I will also say that one reason we were able to keep our large air tankers and our very large air tankers here was because I was able to call Homer Wilkes, who was the undersecretary, and say, if you pull those off, it's going to take us 3 days to bring the mafts up online. These VLATs and LATs are much more effective where they are. And so we were able to keep that air resource here when they were being called to Idaho and other places. We will be continually in work. And I thought, love your idea about slash piles. Part of this funding maybe could go to some of that as well, because that, you know, that's on forests. We would have to work and deal with that. But some of this is on state. And we can, you know, I'd love to work with you. We need to have we need to have more mills. We need to have more folks working timber, and we need to have a better managed forest. No question about it. So thank
Governor,
you. Yep.
On the mitigation part, that's a lot of what the trust does all the time anyway. So we've done a lot of mitigation work around the state, what you would call mitigation work, with removal, thinning, conifer removal in particular in areas where we've got aspen. That's ongoing. The magnitude of this fire and the fact that a lot more of it was actually grassland and shrubland fire is a little bit different. The elk fire, obviously, that's one that you need to look at how you build the restoration piece into being mitigation at the same time. And I think that those are all the things that we work on. But that is an ongoing part of what the trust does. We only have about $8 to $10 million a year to get on the ground independent of this. So it's one bite at a time at how you eat an elephant. But that is ongoing, and we've done a fair amount of that in the Bighorn. So we'll continue that. I think it's a good point. Appreciate you bringing it up.
I just wanted to add, I mean, fires are getting worse every year. Yep. I lived in California a couple of weeks ago, and this fire behavior is completely changing. And so we can only expect larger fires here. And I was talking to one of my brothers, Jake, who's fought fire for 9 years.
He's fought fire for 9 years, and we were looking at Oregon burn. That's where I'm originally from. And we watched two of our mountains burn up there, and it was late in the season. I was going, man, boy, it's coming for Wyoming. And then I get right back here after summer break, and sure enough, you know, it was lit up.
Yep, yep. Bob's son is a smoke jumper, by the way. So, yeah. Other questions? Yes.
I'll use the microphone here.
Yeah, that'd be great if you could come up to the microphone.
Clifford Reed from the town of Dayton. Just first off, Governor, I want to thank you for taking the time to come up here today, and especially during the fire to the town more than once. Thank you to the panel for taking time to come up here today. My question is, and maybe I'm not fully informed on this, this particular fund that you're talking about, this fire prevention for the 2025 season, is there going to be any funds that come from the National Forest, from the Forest Service towards that? Because I feel like this fire particularly really helped drain the state's funds, and it started on federal land, and I feel like they should be responsible for helping the state replenish this fund. And one other thing, you talk about slash piles, this gentleman talked about mitigation. I would like to see the state get involved in forcing the Forest Service to allow where it's accessible. Now, a lot of this burn's not accessible, but where it's accessible on Forest Service land, to force the Forest Service into letting people go up there and cut firewood for free. Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
And Clifford, thanks. Thanks for your leadership during the fire. And you know, certainly your water supply is one thing that we worry a lot about. Thank you for your step up on that. We are working. In fact, the way the federal funds work, Kelly Norris, former forester up here, many of you may know her. Kelly is in the process now of negotiating how much was on federal land, how much was not, and there's a recompensation program that's there. Montana and Wyoming have both fought very hard because there have been some efforts to say we'll give you some percentage of what that full recovery would be, just because the treasury isn't full. And we are in that process saying, no, it's 100% of those fires that are on forest or on BLM, and you have to cover that full cost. It's under normal conditions, that may take up to a year. So we may have a little longer fight on that now.
Thank you.
Mr. Commissioner Novotny.
Good morning, Governor, and thank you for coming up to our part of the woods. Forgive my voice. I've lost it in the Capitol trying to fight for my people. Governor, I would ask that you push back against these changes as much as possible. Last week, I had 18 landowners in Johnson County who had signed up through a USDA grazing deferral program, $2 million worth of payments. The fastest way we can recover those areas impacted by the house draw fire is to get cattle and the sheep out of there and allow them to recover naturally. Through an executive order by the president, that money is now gone. We are going to need as much flexibility as possible through these funds. The lack of a farm bill, as we are under a continuing resolution on that, the inability of this government to pass a meaningful budget. So Governor, I would ask as much flexibility as possible. We've already enrolled our Johnson County landowners as many of these programs as possible. If they are not funded, if we don't have those waivers on the wildlife friendly fences, and if we do not have those deferrals on those farm bill caps, my producers will never recover. So we ask you to continue to fight. It's really unfortunate that there are members of the Appropriations Committee from two of the three most heavily impacted counties who are choosing to not listen to their constituents. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll keep that in mind. Other questions? Yeah, please. Wyoming is a conservative state, and we don't, you know, we don't, and our Constitution actually says that we just can't give money away except for the necessary need of the poor, et cetera. So we're very conscious about making sure that we're thoughtful and not profligate in how we use our dollars. I think there is just a lack of understanding of what it takes to run an agricultural operation these days. Maybe your ranch is mortgaged. Maybe you have an operating loan you've got to take care of. The state of Wyoming requires that the state is in first position. And so I think there's just a lack of understanding. I think the view is loans are always more conservative than grants. And we want to make sure that grants don't, you know, go to the atmosphere. So we're much more interested in having people have skin in the game. Believe me, if you're in one of those ranches, you have skin in the game. We are not going to, you know, we're not going to take care of the $8 million of fence on the house draw fire alone, just perimeter fence. You know, there's a lot that we're going to have to do to get through this. So part of the reason here was to be able to advise people about what these programs are starting to look like and be able to go back to the legislature and say, if this isn't going to work, then fine, let's just cut the money. It's already been cut from 130 down to 100. Yeah, so. Right. And I will be a little bit literal. I do hope, and I'm an irrigator too, I do hope that we don't hold a different standard here than we do to irrigation infrastructure when it fails. Because ranches are affected just as irrigation water users are. And so there should be some consistency there, and I'm not sure we're using the same ruler on both of these. So, thanks. Peter.
Thank you, Governor, for coming up and the calls during the fire. Our question, I think, Reed will have the same thing, is if a weather event on the mountain happens, you know, parts of areas are predicted to be 300% of normal and runoff. So is there going to be a mechanism for instantaneous funding if we need to get equipment here and fast? Because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what we need to ask for. We don't need to have the plans or the engineering on it. It's going to happen because it's going to happen all at once. So is there going to be some kind of way of pivoting real quickly for us small towns?
Mayor, that's exactly why we're here. And that's exactly what the legislature is discussing right now. Jennifer might be able to talk a little bit about MRG, to the point that Ms. Guillen brought. You know, if we stand back and study and then see all that happen, we've got to have a little bit of both. What's the best way for us to approach these lands, and how do we meet the needs if there is a fire on snow event? We've already seen that, you know, in places in Yellowstone and others. So we have to be able to respond to both. But Jennifer, maybe you can speak a little bit about emergency funds and others that are available.
Thank you. Yes, through the MRG program, we do have normal funding application periods, but we do take emergency funding, which can be fill out the grant application, get it to our office. We will work as closely as we can with you. And usually we can get those in front of the board, even if we have to call a special session to the State Loan and Investment Board to fund those projects that are deemed emergency. And so we have been in contact, I believe, with Ranchester and Dayton with water development in concerns with the water runoff and those critical water resources to those communities. And I do believe there is one going to this board meeting for Ranchester to look at that. So we can be very responsive to that and get that money on the ground as quickly as we can. And with that, there's other things that we can do as well if there's other emergency needs. It's threat of public safety, health and human safety. So there is opportunities for that, and definitely reach out to our office and we will gladly work with you to get that in front of the board so we can get that critical funding to you as soon as possible.
Thanks. And let me just quickly talk about MRG just so people here know. Mineral royalty grants are the revenues we get back from the federal programs on minerals that we have. And those grants have been used for lots of different things, but there's always been a component that has gone to the Office of State Lands and Investments and has been useful in helping projects along from communities. So I think Dayton and Ranchester both, I think, benefited part of their water system already from MRG grants. I know Claremont, for example, had a water line failure a couple of years ago, and we stepped in. Rollins has had those issues and others too. But they derive from the funds we get from the federal mineral royalties.
It's hard to
get
the normal process
that
is happening defensive.
Right, right. Yeah, thanks. Other questions?
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Even though I'm not supposed to ask you a question, but what I thought might be helpful is that maybe, you know, some have indicated maybe this $130 million is just kind of, well, where'd that come from? But I think Bob and the governor, you were very deliberate in trying to determine what kind of costs would be necessary to restore and mitigate land. So maybe I'll start with Bob, if you'd like to go into a little more detail.
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. What we did is sat down as we started discussing this and looked at it and said, what are the reasonable numbers that we might use? Thanks to Commissioner Novotny and the commissioners up here, we had actual fence loss numbers. So we knew exactly how many miles of fence had been lost. We could take that and then take the total acreage in those fires and create a factor that we could apply to the entire thing and say, you know what, it's going to be about $45 million worth of fence at the current replacement cost. That's what it's going to take based on that estimate. There is no way you're going to have an absolute number, but that was $45 million of that 130. Then we looked at the area again and said how much of that is going to be affected by invasives at either a red, green, or yellow status. So red would be, has to have immediate treatment, yellow would be maybe it can wait, and green is, it's gonna actually be better than it was. Took a reasonable estimate of that. We figured that probably somewhere around 25% of the total acres would be in that red category at $500 an acre, which is what it costs to treat with Rejuvra for invasive annual grasses, and that number came out to be, well, it's going to be more than 130, I'll tell you that. Then we did the same thing with restoration, and restoration, again, assuming that maybe 25% of the total area, probably would need some kind of restoration plan and action. That cost, we lowballed that cost, I will tell you, at $1,000 an acre. If you have to go out and turn machinery and you have to start buying seed alone for native grasses and shrubs can cost upwards of $500 an acre. So the numbers that we used were actual numbers we know about. The reason that we're involved is that we fund this all the time. For 20 years, that's what I've done, is fund that type of work. So we can go out to the companies and say, where are we at? We consulted with the oil and gas and the mining industry to see what their reclamation and restoration costs were, and came up with $1,000 as a very, that's when everything works right the first time. That can go up even more. But those are the type of numbers that we use to build the request. Then the next part of it was to say, okay, if that puts us at $250 million, what can we do in the coming year, given the number of helicopters it will take to do application for chemical, given the number of man hours and equipment hours it would take to do restoration, given the availability of native seed, which is not endless. In fact, it's very competitive and hard to get. What could we do in 1 year? That's where the $130 million number came from. The reduction by 30, I'd be curious to see what metrics they use to come up with that. Likewise, the change from grant to loan, that, I think, to your question, ma'am, I think there was a certain amount of politics in it, but I think the governor is mostly correct. They aren't people who deal with this every day, so it seemed like an exorbitant amount. I will tell you, it is not an exorbitant amount. It is very reasonable to get us out there this year and get the things done that we need to do.
Yep.
My issue, I'm kind of just a nobody and second at hand, and I appreciate all that you have done and the firefighters have done. My question is, just as a personal person who
manages my own budget, if this was insufficient and we're going to be recovering a while, and the ranchers and farmers, which are the backbone of our communities in Johnson and Sheridan counties, are going to be in the hole, just personally, when I find myself that I've shortcutted myself in a budget, I make plans for the future not to do so again. This, I've been in Sheridan since I was 2 and I'm now 76. So this was a historic fire from what I can remember. And I'm wondering what measures we can do as just an individual citizen. What can I do that will help reconfigure how we deal with future events when we are having trouble just accommodating this past season?
And thank you for that question. I think everybody heard the bulk of that. And let me first address whether we should have asked for more money. We took a reasonable guess at what we thought could be valuable in helping to address this issue. And again, first and foremost, it's after the federal programs have run. It takes some time to get that done. So we wanted to make sure we found a balance in that. We've had, prior to this year, two pretty reasonable years, you know, where Montana was burning up, Idaho was burning up, Wyoming only had a few fires a year ago, you know, year before last. And the year before that was pretty light, too. And so there was a temptation among some to say, let's, you know, build a massive fund that can carry us forever. But that's all money that's sidelined, and we wanted to make sure that we kept it in place so it would be valuable. To your point about what can we do as citizens to be able to help set this up, this resource also talks about things you can do to make sure if you're in a, you know, wildland urban interface area, here are the things you can do to mitigate against potential loss of your house. You know, I think of some of the houses in Story. God love those people, and, you know, grew up here too, and they're beautiful houses. I can remember going there. Some of those are in danger. And I think it's up to landowners to do what they can to make sure they can protect, make a defensible perimeter. That's true for grasslands too. in the case of the House Draw Fire, our ranch crew went out to help fight on that fire, and it ran away from them. And it ended up, that was outside of KC, and it ended up just outside of Buffalo. You know, these fires are to the point that the young man here, they're acting unpredictably. This fire burned down at night and then went up during the day. Same thing in the Haystack Fire outside of Guernsey. There's a lot of different fire behavior. So I think it behooves us all to make sure our spaces are defensible. I think it also makes sense for us to, as a community, talk about what are the things that we can do better to make sure that we are fire ready. And I'm sure that's a conversation we'll all be having. And lastly, not every rancher was affected. So my neighbors just to the east of us lost about 90%. We didn't lose any. You know, I don't need those kinds of resources. We need to make sure that we put them in the places where it's going to make and benefit those kind of folks that have lived there for some time. Thank you. Other questions? Well, yeah, please.
I just wanted to understand the $100 million or $130 million. Is that for a 12-month period? I hear multi-year. So is that supposed to be expanded for 2 years or 3 years or 4 years?
Right.
What's the time constraint on that?
Yeah, so this would be for the supplemental budget. So that will be for the remainder of this year. You know, the new budget will come into play at the remainder of this budget year, which will be up until the budget is passed next year. So the following July 1st is when that budget will go into play. So it would be functionally for the remainder of this budget year, which is over a two-year period. If that should be clear as mud. I'd like to be a college professor, but I, yeah. Anyway, thank you.
One more question for me. You came up here to talk about MRG and the fire
right. Related
to restoration mitigation. So the original request for the additional MRG was $20.17 million. That's been reduced to $15 million.
Right.
Should there be any comments about that?
Sure. Thank you, Randall. So the MRG program is distinct, and it is an ongoing program in state government, and it's something that over many years we have relied on for infrastructure in the state. I recommended $21 million. That's been reduced down to $15 million, and the issue there, I think, is because we had ARPA, we had IIJA, we had all the things Jennifer has been going through that I know, you know, your hospital, for example, had to deal with all the federal constraints that were associated with it. Those programs are now done, completely gone, and this administration, I think, will pull back those federal funds, and I'm very thankful for that from a debt aspect. But the monies that, the MRG monies that we receive as a state, as a revenue source, actually can be very useful for communities going forward. As I said, Dayton had some of this water treatment plant fixed within, there were some emergencies and others. I think we've done operating rooms in various parts around the state. What those funds are useful for is otherwise taxpayers might have to pay additional funding if they want to see something of value built. And the MRG allows for the state to help pick up part of the tab. And so Jennifer, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but as I say, from my standpoint, MRG has been a particularly valuable program in that communities can come and counties can come with requests from everything from courthouse repair to other things. And in the process of being in front of the state loan and investment board, they can get funding. And in the case of where we don't have enough money, often communities will band together and try to figure out a way to scrape their projects to make sure another community can have a little bit of funding. So.
Yeah, thank you. We have funded several projects recently with the Sheridan Hospital and the Helline Church Street. Out of the MRG program, But one of the things we were looking at in that additional request was the amount of funding that communities were not able, those for water and sewer projects and HHS projects through ARPA, that had to be relinquished due to those deadlines that I mentioned earlier. We took back or relinquished, because they were not under contract due to those federal requirements that were outside of our limitations. When you take money from the federal government, they come with a lot of strings attached. And our office alone, through projects awarded by the SLIP board, relinquished just over $14 million that we were able to redeploy to other communities, projects that were under contract. But that left us with a lot of really good engineered projects that are shelf, you know, that will be shelf ready to go, that were important, that need to be funded. So that is one component of that ask for that additional MRG funding, is to move forward those projects that had been started and that engineering that's been done, so that we can move those good projects. As well, as I mentioned, every time we have an application funding project application to take to the State Loan and Investment Board, the amount of money requested is usually sometimes double what we have at that point in time to allocate. So there is a great need out there for our communities.
Maybe
we'll get one more question in, Governor. Bob, Governor, would you talk about process? I think there's, you know, the legislature meets down in Cheyenne. We don't always follow it closely. But where are we in the budget process? What will happen in the next 2 weeks?
I will not try to answer what will happen in the next 2 weeks down there. But where we are in the process, the request went to, and this is always a little confusing in an election year, the request went to the sitting Joint Appropriations Committee, which is 7 members from the House and 5 from the Senate, to consider. Once the election took place, the Joint Appropriations Committee was completely different people. So I presented to the previous Joint Appropriations, walked through the numbers. That new group went through their budget and made the changes that they've made. That is now $100 million instead of $130, and it's a loan program instead of a grant program. That budget was closed, and it now will go to the floor of both the Senate and the House, and that's where it can be altered again through an amendment. I think we have an agreement, potentially in the Senate, that we will do $40 million in loans and $60 in grants. I'm not sure where that is in the House. That clearly is not consistent with what the governor asked for or what we proposed in our supplemental budget. But if we can get some of that out there on the ground through a grant process, it's critical in my mind. The next 2 weeks, next 3 weeks, they will work that supplemental budget, and then they will have something to move forward to the governor for his signature. But at this point, where we are is $100 million in loans. And I won't pull any benches. That's not going to work, folks. That's just not going to work.
So, and what I'd point out, if anybody is asking, is that Wyoming by constitution requires a biennium budget. So you set the budget for 2 years. This is the general session. Next year will be the budget session. And that's where it takes 2/3 of a vote for non-budget related items to be brought to the legislature. We build the budget for the next 2 years, next year. So why the supplemental budget? This year, we had certain inflationary costs that came to bear, so we required a bit of supplement to be able to deal with those. Wanted to make sure that we were able to keep OB services in our communities. And that was in advance that I said, please, let's find a way to help support OB. Fire suppression, obviously we spend all the money in basically 2 months to fight the fires last year. We would have nothing left for next year. So that was the other request. And the third one was to say, what about mitigation and helping people get back on their feet? Not only that, but also the ability to start thinking about what do we do a better job of when we come to managing our forests, managing our grasslands, managing our urban. But just to make it clear, none of this is my deal. This is the people of Wyoming's. My budget was passed last year. Every single one of the items in the supplement is something that is going to be of value to the people of Wyoming, including the education program. If that's all cut, not on me, I don't care. What I do care about is making sure the people of Wyoming have the services that they need. And that's why we're here, to hear from you about what we can do to make sure that those services are appropriate and available. I was just there, and I'll be back there this evening, so thanks. And it's Washington, too, by the way, so thanks. Well, if that is it, maybe there's an opportunity for just kind of some questions on a personal level and anything anybody wants to talk about. We can be here for a bit, but we have to...
We have about 20 minutes if we want to...
Yeah. Thank you again, everyone, for being here. Thank you for your commitment to your community and also your support of your firefighters. And I also see Travis there. Thank you for law enforcement as well. This is a great, great state, and this is one of the best parts of this state. This is where I grew up, and I care a lot about Sheridan and Johnson County. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.